The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International.
Welcome to Comics League International, episodes and so once again, I'm doing a little bit of a hiatus from the typical Starman format that I've been doing for the most part, and I'm welcoming back my buddy Derek.
Whee!
And we're going to talk about
I'm
the
here
movie.
And I'm excited!
Yay! Excitement is exciting!
Yay!
And we're going to talk about Willow. 1988 Willow.
Directed by
Ron Howard. Mm-hmm. Little Opie Cunningham, as he was always referred to on Saturday Night Live. And let's see, this was actually, for those of you who don't know, this was actually an idea by George Lucas. So he did Star Wars, and then he's like, you know what? Willow, Radioland Murders, we're bringing it to ya. So this movie, I guess when this came out, I would have been 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I gotta say, I've watched this movie many, many times. This was my go-to movie as a kid.
I don't know if I loved it that much, but I definitely watched it many, many times as a kid.
Like, I definitely, like, to me, this, until Lord of the Rings comes out, this was pretty much the best fantasy movie I could think of.
What about Krull?
Krull, like, honestly, I don't know why, a lot of them just weren't on my radar. I think part of it is because no one else in my family is really like a fantasy type person. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we knew of Legend, of course. We knew of Labyrinth. And, mm-hmm. I mean, those, like, I don't know. There's something about them that felt a bit more campy. And I guess in a way, Krull, when I saw it in college, was kind of the same thing. You know?
Wait, is your argument that Willow is not campy?
Oh, it's totally my argument. Nothing camp at all about Willow, sir.
The deadly serious, grimdark fantasy of Willow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it's the fact that I don't know. It had that like nice balance, and even for the 80s, at least to me, like watching, say, like Legend, or watching I'm trying to think of what other, like Beastmaster. Something about those, if you caught them on like TNT on a Sunday afternoon, mm-hmm. it kind of felt like that was where they belonged.
Okay. I get what you're saying. Yeah. There is a lot of humor in Willow.
Yeah.
A lot of things that are a little silly, but generally it takes itself and the world fairly seriously.
Yeah, and maybe it's just like there's just enough artistry where it doesn't come across feeling like cheap.
Mm-hmm.
I think if it as around the same time, if I'd also been exposed to like Dragon Slayer?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
I think like it would have been like, ooh, which is better, Willow or Dragon Slayer? I think it would have been a toss-up.
Right.
But for some reason, I didn't even know Dragon Slayer existed until someone's like, hey, you know that guy from Ghostbusters 2, which we've also talked about, was in a fantasy movie?
Were you aware?
No, I wasn't.
You weren't ready for Dragon Slayer. Dragon Slayer came into your life at exactly the right time.
It was. And, you know, it's a good flick. But it's no Willow.
No.
What's your stake on Willow?
Oh, well, I was actually... I like it a lot. I don't think... now that I know that it's like you love it so deeply...
If you talk bad about it, I'll cry.
I will not like it to make this conversation interesting. No. I enjoy this movie a lot. I've watched it a ton. It's been a while.
Mm.
Like, I don't remember the last time I sat down and watched Willow all the way through. Like, I maybe caught, like, a part of it if it was on TV or something.
Mm-mm.
It's one of those movies that we were just talking right before we started recording. I was like, how long is this movie? And you're like, oh, it's over 2 hours. I'm like, what? Because in my mind, like, your mind kind of collapses all the events of that movie into, like, a 90-minute thing. But there's actually long period, like, especially in the beginning of the movie, they spend their time in that first act really, like, establishing Willow and his community and all that kind of stuff. So I like the movie a lot. It's been a long time since I've watched it. I'm interesting to rewatch it to see the things I don't remember, because there's certain key points that are, like, burned into my consciousness. But there's probably going to be like, oh, I don't remember that at all. I do like how it does run the gamut from, like, very sort of, you know, safe, shire, happy fantasy to, like, really dark, dark stuff towards the end of the film.
Yeah.
And even though it's borrowing left and right, like, it's like, give me all your Star Wars stuff. Give me all your Lord of the Rings stuff. Give me all your D&D stuff. Just give me. We're putting it all in the movie.
Woo.
But it does it earnestly, like, from a place of love, I feel. It's just so much fun that I don't think I'm gonna watch it and be like, oh wait, now I hate this. Like, I think I'm gonna be like, yeah, I still like this.
You're not gonna leave the podcast just disappointed in your memories of Willow?
I don't think so.
I hope I'm not either. The last time I watched it, I'm pretty sure, was high school.
Wow. Okay.
Because I remembered, the reason I was able to watch it so much is a friend taped it off of HBO and gave us, like, a VHS tape. So ad nauseum, baby, ad nauseum.
If I remember correctly, we had the VHS tape that had, it was Willow and Tron and a third movie that I can't remember right now. Maybe it'll come to me while we're watching this.
Yeah, I had no idea what the, like, I can't remember what the other two ones, because all that mattered was Willow. Well, like we said, this is a long movie, and we'll probably split this up over two episodes. So let's go ahead and jump right in, because I'm sure all the other stuff we talk about, you know, we'll be able to talk about during the movie. This is our commentary. You know, I don't want to surprise anyone here, but I think, just in case you're wondering what insider knowledge we'll be able to bring to you to the making and inner workings of Willow, that's pretty much none.
Yeah, I have no idea how this movie is made.
I read the IMDb trivia. And, you know, but I think when it comes to just the movie and themes and stuff like that, we'll hopefully be able to, you know, add a few interesting stuff. And plus, we're likable, gosh darn it. We're likable.
It's like sitting on the couch between us, and you've got the popcorn, and we reach over, and we touch hands, and it's weird, but it's not weird.
Hey, look, there's a line on the screen, because we're starting Willow in 3, 2, 1. Your intimacy scared me.
Oh, okay. Rawr!
Yeah.
Rawr!
You know, even with the lion, like, it still just makes me think, like, we're watching a classic.
Oh, I see. We're watching the Blu-ray that added the Lucasfilm bit there.
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Who?
Ronnie Howard.
Oh, 80s movies got to start with the text.
I love the names in this movie. Bavmorda.
I was just about to say, the names of this movie are so silly.
Really?
In that perfect, like, Dungeons & Dragons way, I'm like, yes, Bavmorda. Or as we all said, Bad Morda.
But it was right there on the screen, dude. How did you get Bav Morda and Bav?
Well, remember, we're watching this on VHS, so the first couple minutes are going to have the weird tracking problem.
Oh, good point.
She bears the mark. This is a really convenient way to mark the chosen one, that they just have a straight up tattoo when they're born.
Well, you know, I mean, it's this is back when curses were all analog. Now they didn't have the I don't know, digital birthmarks. You get your scanner.
I do remember being really bothered by this as a kid, because the movie starts and it's very like, I didn't know what was going on, and there's a screaming baby and everyone's upset, and I remember like not really like getting it until I was much older.
Yeah.
To the point where I would watch the movie, I wouldn't remember that this is how the movie started. To me, the movie started with Willow, like, in his field with the pig.
Yeah. Now, one thing I like about this, in a way, is... Now, I'm trying to remember the movie, is that it doesn't seem like, other than the fact that she, obviously the girl, Alora Dannan, is a child of legend, it doesn't really seem like her family line is important.
Yeah, like the her mother is just kind of, she's not important. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know.
Killed off screen.
I feel like a lot of movies nowadays, there's so much importance on, like, everything has to be important. You know.
Yes.
You can't just be someone who grows up to be awesome. You gotta, you know, have that connection to everything behind you and in front of you and blah, 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 blah. And it just feels so tiring.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Val Kilmer, top billing.
Apparently, according to the IMDb trivia, which is the last time I'll reference that bit, George Lucas was kind of upset that Val Kilmer did get top billing over Warwick Davis. Because Davis does have, like, the most time in it, but...
Hey, that's why you have an agent.
Exactly.
That's what the agent does for you. Get your top billing.
Did you know that Warwick Davis now kind of also serves as an agent, I think?
I didn't know that.
He has a...
Billy Barty.
His kind of specialty is... I think it's actors and actresses who are either under 5 foot or 4 foot. I forget which one. And over 7 foot.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that. This baby does a lot of mugging in this movie, I'm going to say.
Well,
after
watching
Ghostbusters 2, lots of baby mugging. Though this is a much more attractive baby than Ghostbusters
2. Yeah, yeah. Now, do you think if your job in a movie is to go through and look at babies and decide if they're cute or not, do you think that like kind of kills your soul?
Not any more than any other Hollywood casting job, I think.
Like if your job is to professionally look at a baby and be like, I don't know, that baby's kind of ugly. Like,
I love these wolf rat dog things they have, because they're totally just dogs with like Halloween costumes on.
Great. It's great. I also kind of like that in a way. This is a Moses story.
In a way.
You know, yeah. Well, because I'm pretty sure originally rat dogs didn't spring out of nowhere.
No, the bull rushes thing. Like, that is...
Admittedly, it's been a while since I've read the Bible.
Moses.
You know. Also, pretty sure Moses, no tattoo.
No. He didn't get the tattoo.
Didn't get a tattoo.
Executive producer George Lucas.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, this is stolen quite out of it, but this baby... Never parts the Red Sea?
No.
No.
At least not that we remember.
Well, maybe in the sequels.
Were they going to make Willow sequels?
I think so. I mean, you never know with George Lucas. But they did put out books.
There was supplementary fiction that continued the story.
Yeah, there was. These came out. I remember I had like the first two. They came out. I want to say in either like the late 90s or so. But there were three books, co-written between George Lucas and Chris Claremont of X-Men fame.
Interesting.
However, they're not that good.
Okay.
It starts off, total spoilers, but it does kind of start off with the entire main cast outside of Willow and the baby getting killed in like the first 30 pages of the book.
Wow.
Yeah. Warwick Davis is now on screen.
He's so good. He's so great in this movie.
17 years old when this movie was made.
What?
Yeah, 17. And he's fantastic. And even, again, like, we're getting, like, names like Daikini.
I like it. Yeah, the exposition of the world stuff is very well handled.
Mm.
It doesn't feel forced.
Nah.
And I do like that. I do like that they didn't do like most movies, where it's like instead of being like humans, they're like humanes, you know, or whatever.
They be like, "Come on, play dumb jock."
Daikini and Nelwyn. I'm like, oh, that's great.
And there's also a little bit of joy at the beginning where Willow's like, "Nope, get rid of him. Don't want it.
Hide this. Let's get rid of this baby." Yeah, he's the reluctant hero, as Joseph Campbell would say.
Oh.
He resists the call to adventure. This movie works really well, much like Star Wars Episode 4, because it's like beat for beat, monomyth. Love it. Love it.
And just even little bits of just stuff like, I love the Burglecut, the like banker town guy. He just seems like the pompous. He's so good.
He's fantastic.
Everything you want this minor character to be, he is, without overplaying it.
No, he feels like an absolutely real person in this world.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just hate him. You're like, ah, Burglecut.
Mm-hmm. And, like, I think in a way that's one of the things that kind of is a feather in this movie's cap, is all the minor characters are still really strong performers.
Oh, yeah. And all the, I guess, little people is the right term, right?
I think so.
I do not wish to offend. They're great. And then, especially in this movie, like they just get to be characters. They're not there just as, you know, especially, like, I forget his name, the warrior, the head of the warriors.
Oh, yeah,
he's just
such
a badass.
And I remember the friend's name is Migosh.
Yeah, Migosh. I love Migosh.
We'll say
the kids are great in this, and his wife is fantastic, and yeah.
The tattoo's great.
There's that tattoo.
And, oh man. Yeah, and like, I'm thinking of Star Trek, where, like, you'll have some amazing, amazing actors, but then once they get to, like, the kind of small-line characters, you know, they're all like, hey, oh no, we should use the tractor beam.
Yeah, right. That doesn't happen in this movie. Everyone's pretty good, with a few exceptions that I may be recalling. We'll call them out. This scene is fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, just him losing his mind, and the kids
laughing.
There it is. The moment. Like, oh, no, love you.
Does this count as the meet cute? And their romantic
comedy. I think this is their official meet cute. We want to use that term. It's so good, though. He's so good. Yeah, I'm on your side.
Aw, you're a cute little baby. He's like, nope, I'm gonna go. And, yeah, there's something about, like, it's a weird thing to say, but how they did the Nelwyn town with all the little people, it also feels very real, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's great. Like, it feels very organic. It doesn't feel like, because some of those fantasy movies, like, try a little too hard to make it fantastical.
Yeah.
And this is just like, no, these seem like people that live here, that they're having a festival, and they're wearing their best clothes. And, okay, and this is a great screenwriting thing, this bit that he's about to do with the pig.
Oh, like, yeah. No, it's
the
fantastic.
Setup and payoff of that is like, it's so, I love it. I
and
love
even,
it
even
so
Burgle
much.
Cut there being like, oh, that is a good trick. I mean, I'm still evil, yeah. Don't get me wrong, but. And just little bits that, like, everything here still feels rooted in in the real world. You know, like what are they doing on a little, like, festival day? They're playing games, they're doing dances. Nothing is too, you know, oh, look at our dancing globes of magical energy. It's, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and they don't draw your attention to anything. It's a great crowd scene of, like, yeah. There's a little bit of this, a little bit of this, look at that. Oh, yeah, it's great, you know.
And even
I hope this was fun for them to shoot. I mean, sometimes these things could be really grueling to shoot. But yeah, look at everyone's faces. They're so good in this scene.
Exactly. Almost makes you think a lot of them are really used to, like, crowd work.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
Yeah. And even, like, I'm throwing my hand up and laughing at you.
Oh, here we go. The man himself.
Billy Barty?
Billy Barty. Oh, yes. No one else could play this part but Billy Barty. No one.
Now, I remember when I first saw this, I didn't really know who Billy Barty was. So I'm like, and Billy Barty! I was young enough where I didn't quite get why they're doing Billy Barty. I was like, oh, is it because he's just that cool? Apparently, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, man. He's Billy Barty. Yeah. I love this little parable. A little, like, which finger do you change the world with or whatever. So good. This is a really good, like, wizard, you know, like, test moment. Dig it a lot.
It's very cool. Now, here's a question for you. What do you think? Do you think that the High Alduin, I guess is what we should call him, rather than just Billy Barty.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he actually has, like, magical powers, or do you think he's just kind of like a wise man?
Well, remember he gives Willow the acorns that turn things to stone.
That's right!
But I view him as, like, by the time Willow comes back, he's a much greater wizard than the High Alduin, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think he's got legit chops. He's probably like a level 2 wizard.
Yeah, like a hedge wizard.
Yeah, he's probably really good at, like, weather magic and stuff like that.
Oh no, stuff's going down.
I bet those dogs hated being in those masks.
Well, it's why they're attacking everything. If only they could somehow...
I love this shot from the dog's perspective.
Yeah.
Look at the baby. She's freaking...
Crying children. Always a good go-to. Another thing I like about this movie that I think really helps capture it for me is, like, soon we're going to get the warrior starting to pop out. And the fact that they feel like they don't feel comical. They feel very badass.
No, they are, like, not playing for comedy. These guys are badass.
Yeah. Like, nope, you don't want to mess with the Nelwyn warriors.
Yeah, they kill it. Like, they do it. They take it out.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, these dogs are huge.
Yeah, Thunkar, or whatever his name is, because they have the big scene later where...
Thunkar.
Thunkar, yeah. Where he's not going to go with the adventuring party until Burglecut has to go.
Yeah.
I do think that the High Alduin has, like, a couple of cantrips and maybe a couple spells, but most of his magic is just... being a clever motherfucker.
Which, really, that's useful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, sure, make water. heal disease. That's all nice and good. But clever motherfucker. Roll it.
Yeah. You have infinite charges on that.
Exactly. Well,
I love the moment of like realizing that his wife might be in danger and running home. Mm. It's good stuff.
And just that little bit like, hey, what's up?
Hey, what's up? I think we've all had that moment where you have that like, oh shit, something's happened, and you like can't get a hold of. And now with cell phones, it doesn't happen as much. But like you rush home to check on them, and then what? I was like taking a bath. You're like, I thought you were dead for reasons, you know.
Because my psychic powers really aren't all they're cracked up to be.
Sometimes they really go off.
I'll just be honest. I'm not actually psychic. I'm really not even a clever motherfucker. I'm just vaguely competent.
No, I love this when he starts to like, let's leave. In the pit.
You know, I think. I'm curious if it's coming through the speakers. Is the construction going on right outside my window bleeding through?
Yes.
Okay, just in case people are listening, apparently the form of construction is to take one pipe and hit it against another pipe. Cool. As you do.
A Dakini child.
And... oh, greedy ass burgle cut. Yeah. I mean, this movie's really taking its time with the intro. I mean, we're 18 minutes into the movie. And you know, not counting the baby. But we've really only met one main character.
Yeah, and our hero has not crossed the threshold yet.
No, he still doesn't want to do it.
I will consult the bones. The bones tell me nothing. That's like some take that with you to the grave watcher. It's like, the bones tell me nothing.
Yeah. He's, you know, he's really.
It is interesting how they handle the spellcasters in this movie, because we have High Alduin, we have Finn Rizal, and we have Bav Morda.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's it, right?
Yeah.
But so we have, like, this guy who's clearly mostly a trickster. We have Finn Rizal, who's just, like, lost it, essentially. And then Bav Morda, who's
just. You'd be polymorph evil. For that long. See what happens.
I know.
Son of. Show some compassion, man.
I'm just saying, there is no Gandalf. There is no wise wizard to show up and be like, do this, dude. You know?
Yeah. I like how the High Alduin is a parallel to Gandalf.
Yeah.
Who just, you know, if Gandalf only, if he didn't come back and throw, like, I could totally see the High Alduin throwing flaming pine cones at people is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I could see that. Yeah. I love this little political battle between Burklecut and the High Alduin. Fixed your grits, Burklecut.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, and this is basically the speech about like having to go either left or right. To find the way to adventure, whatever it was, from Lord of the Rings. You gotta trust in yourself, dude.
Yeah, this is a good speech. It's a good setup for his whole arc of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I love fantasy and like quote unquote children's films because they get like the structure can just be right there on the surface. Like, here it is. Here's what his journey is. Enjoy.
I keep on noticing just how nice the costumes are.
Oh yeah, they're great.
Like look at all the colors, super, and all the super detailed work inside in this,
and all the little patches he has on his collar there. Yeah,
yeah, and even just like with the dresses and the stuff in the background, they're all like nicely embroidered, and you know,
Yeah, they spent some money.
They did.
I love Rannan's little acorn hat that he wears.
I wish I had a thing like that.
And also, I love this moment with his kids, because they're just thinking up scary stuff, and it's everything that he pretty much actually encounters.
Yeah.
It's trolls, nice. Dragons.
Brownies! Now, how long did it take for you to, like, realize, oh, the little things are brownies. They're not talking about, like, little... What? Chocolate desserts?
I think as a kid, like, I did that thing where... So it was something I didn't understand, so it just got ejected from my brain. Like, I didn't even process, like, oh, I don't know what that means. Weird. Out.
Girl Scouts? I mean, I know they're scary, but...
It's also interesting having the main character who's, like, already married, already has children. You know, it's very grounded. Like, he's always has a clear reason to get back home. It's not like there's no romance plot. There's none of that. Like, nope. Trying to get back to my wife. That's all I'm doing.
And the hair braid, and it's really touching. And it also kind of makes his reluctance to go on the adventure a little more stomachable.
Yeah, and it makes when he chooses to actually keep going, you're like, you understand the cost that he's paying.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Ignore the bird. Twatha. It's going back to the village. Great. Great bit.
Mug for the camera, baby.
Follow the bird. Follow the river.
Just good.
Good matte painting moment.
Yep. I miss good matte paintings.
Yep. You don't. I mean, you see them digitally, like the same concept, but not quite. I mean, that's live. That's cool.
Oh yeah.
I think. Where were they? Was this New Zealand? Was this like super proto
Lord of the Rings? I think so. The main reason I'm pretty sure I can say yes to that is because one of the people who says they were like a baby for a little bit was from New Zealand. Like, yeah, when I was a kid.
I love they stopped the entire plot to have this like gross. Ugh, the worst.
Yeah.
This movie spends a lot of time on, like, when does she eat? Who changes her diapers? Like, they put in the time. Like, no. They're traveling with a baby. There's things they have to worry about.
And as a father of a one-year-old, oh man, I think that would be the part that really hits home for me now.
General Kale.
Yeah, that sucks. I like his not-quite-Skeletor outfit.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like Darth Vader and Skeletor combined. Even though it's funny because he takes it off and you're like, oh, you ruined it. Put your mask back down.
Oh, no, I think the beard sells it.
Like, I like the guy behind Bav Morda with his uber dark wizard beard.
Oh, yeah. Who looks somewhat like Gary Oldman.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know. So let's
see. One day I feel your daughter will betray you.
I trust her a lot more than I trust yours.
Yeah. Just wanted to establish that obviously she's going to betray her before the end of the movie.
What are you talking about? No.
What?
I mean, it's not like she's going to meet some gallant guy, end up falling in love.
No, that's not going to happen.
I mean, don't be ridiculous.
Also love the moments of, like, you know, Willow changing her and stuff. You're like, well, he's a dad. He knows how to do that.
Yeah. You know, I wonder if that was the reason why they also made him a father. Of like,
could very well be. Makes a lot of sense.
It works. Gives them a little bit of points of experience.
Sorsha.
That might be the weakest name.
Yeah, it's got lots of
And I was like, wait, are they trying to... Is it supposed to be Sasha? Is it supposed to be, like, a sorcerer?
Yeah.
I was confused.
They should have workshopped that name a little more.
Just a touch. You know. I mean... It's not terrible, terrible. but it's no Burgle Cutter Vonkar.
Lots of shots of them traveling.
Yep.
Travel, travel, travel.
Well, I mean, they're going far, dude.
For them. Yeah, but a movie now would, like, there wouldn't be...
Nah.
Two-thirds of these scenes. Like,
nah.
Okay, they get there, you know, like...
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and, here we go.
And I like that this does kind of set up the fact that, like, this is a long journey for them, you know? It's not like this was just a quick ways to go, like, oh, we'll just go to the end of the block. Like, this was already a huge journey. Again, like you said, it just sets up more of they're doing big stuffs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Ooh. Something's happening. Soon we're gonna get the yeah, here he comes. I think I'm gonna start calling people Peck.
Okay.
Just, you know, when I'm angry. Listen, Peck. What a great introduction to our typical hero. So you're big into the Joseph Conrad?
Joseph Campbell?
Joseph Campbell. Yeah, because Joseph Conrad was the Heart of Darkness. Joseph Campbell, which does Mad Mardigan here count as the wild man friend?
Oh, yes.
Does his teeth get better after he's out of the crow cage?
Yeah, they have a moment where he's, like, scrubbing his teeth with, like, a stick or something. Because, I mean, you know, he's Val Kilmer, and back when he was pretty.
He's still pretty in my heart.
Okay.
And he can still, you know, use swords. In my heart. So, D&D... third edition or Pathfinder character classes.
Oh, for
I guess for now, Willow and Mad Mardigan.
Well, Willow's like a level zero acolyte, you know, like mage or whatever at this point.
And I guess Mad Mardigan would just be straight up fighter. Oh, did we get a little sky pickup? You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. We had a little bit of a sky pickup, I think. So you were saying Willow's a level zero acolyte?
I'm more like a level zero, like, NPC farmer, you know? And he's trying to get that first level of wizard.
Yeah.
And Mad Mardigan is, like, a level four fighter. He's legit.
He's legit. Yeah.
He says no equipment.
Now, would he be more of a fighter or more of a ranger at a low level?
I mean, he doesn't really seem to have much, like, range craft. Like, I don't see him tracking much or anything like that. So, no, I think he's just a straight-up fighter with weapon proficiency, like, two weapon fighting, you know, and weapon focus, you know, that kind of stuff.
With a high charisma, of course.
Oh, yeah, like,
yeah.
Some reason he has a high charisma.
You know, he rolled really high and was like, wisdom? Nah, charisma, baby, charisma.
I love the scene. Oh yeah, when the troop comes by.
Oh yeah.
It's the best line of the movie, that Eric or whatever his name is gives to him.
And that's why you'll die in a crow cage?
Yeah, the I still serve Galador and you serve no man.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just brushed his teeth right there. Yeah.
Which, you know,
it's a tiny detail, but they took the time to show it. It's one of those, like, I like good film. Like, I feel like Ron Howard is a good filmmaker.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he'll ever be a great filmmaker. But especially, like, early in his career, like, taking, like, no, I'm going to film this sequence. And, like, no, okay, I want his teeth to be clean, so I need to show him cleaning his teeth. Like, I can't just skip it.
Yeah.
Like, I want to show it, you know.
I think with Ron Howard, most of the movies of his I've seen, there's nothing there that would be, like, revolutionary. Nothing that reinvents the wheel. But he makes damn good wheels.
I'm the greatest swordsman that ever lived. Yeah, he makes very good wheels.
Yeah. And more often than not, it's a good final product.
Mm-hmm.
And he made Willow.
He's made some really good films. Like, I'm not knocking him at all.
So, in the deleted scenes of the movie, or just stuff that didn't make it into the plot, there's a lot more details of Mad Mardigan, by the way.
Hmm. Interesting.
There's a whole bunch of stuff. Now, some of the drafts they've talked about had a lot to do with Mad Mardigan, about how, and I think some of this made it into the film, but it's more subtext.
Implied.
That originally a knight of the kingdom of Galadorn.
Sure.
And that the character Eric, was his only real friend, but Mad Mardigan's recklessness got him into trouble, as did a love affair with an Eastern beauty that tainted the family name. But before Mad Mardigan could kind of regain his honor, he actually deserted before a battle. So the backstory doesn't explicitly explain why he's in the crow cage there.
Right.
But, you know, I guess deserting the battle might lead to it. Although, since Eric does seem kind of surprised to find him, it could just be simple thievery.
Yeah, just something, some stupid thing.
Hmm.
Well, I always knew you'd end up in a crow's cage.
Just the nice...
Yeah, this is when, like, Nokmar and Galador, and I'm like, come on, guys.
Really? I'm okay
it's
with
too
it.
Much. Trying too hard.
Really? I remember watching this a lot, wanting a lot more of Eric from this.
He doesn't get enough screen time. No. Yeah, just that. I don't think I remember that, where he says the line, like, you know, you serve no one. Then he's like, remember? It's like, oh, clearly Mad Mardigan said that shit to him, probably when he deserted, I guess, in the backstory. And I was like, yeah. I love little moments like that imply such a huge history and, like, a connection. Yeah. Love it.
Without going overboard on the, hey, don't you recall that exact moment? Let's make it painfully clear.
Rolling his charisma here. Resist it, Willow.
Migos just failed. Right there. That was his role. You saw it in his eyes.
Doesn't have a high will save.
No. Well, I mean, Migosh, you know, he's probably still a bachelor. He's like, I gotta get back to town, baby.
I believe he would, Willow.
But I know a lot of women who do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's such a scoundrel.
I mean, to be fair, I don't feel like Mad Mardigan is lying. Like,
no.
He immediately screws up, which we find out later, but he's like, yeah, I'll take the baby, I'll walk her to the nearest tavern and hand her to the first wench I see, basically.
Yeah, and I mean,
like,
you know.
He will do what he says. He is at least that you know, chaotic good enough, you know.
Yeah. And even though he fails, I mean, who expects brownies and eagles to come steal a baby from you while you're taking a pee?
Yeah, that's something that could happen to anyone.
You know, I mean, this was before they had the baby Bjorn strap things. Otherwise,
right. And also, for some reason, like, how the difference in height between them and the Daikini didn't really strike me as much until he gets out of the cave and stands up right next to them. Like, oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they do some nice little, like, camera angle stuff to really accentuate. No, he's really tall. Like, right there. He's just looming over Willow.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean... like, Willow, especially when you look at like Burglecut, still comes across as a small Nelwyn.
Yes.
And the baby's sad.
Mm-hmm. Don't leave me with this guy.
He smells like blackroot.
My mother raised me on blackroot.
Puts hair on your chest.
Yeah. Oh boy, your word of honor. Thanks, bro.
Totally. And this is where the movie ends, right?
Yeah, the end of the movie. Like, you know, then when he's always confused, like, but if we hurry, we hope about tomorrow morning. I'm like, you guys walked for what seemed like days.
Well, now they're not having to carry a lot of stuff.
That's true.
You know? I mean, probably Burglecut was asking for, like, rests every now and then. A lot of times. I can't believe they actually put a baby, you know, in the talons of a falcon. I mean, that just
seems... Well, they worked with that falcon for months.
For months. Sure.
They lost a few babies, to be honest, but...
But it came off really well on screen.
Yeah, I don't know how well this, you know, the green screen... little brownie guys. I don't know how well that's aged.
Nah, it hasn't aged well. You know. But it doesn't look
better than CGI would have.
Oh yeah, totally.
Kevin Pollak himself.
God bless him.
Just trying to get that paycheck.
Oh, he got that paycheck, baby.
Random forest spirit here with some exposition for you.
How you doing? I mean, if you don't want random forest spirits, then I don't know why you came here.
It must have been so weird for the two dudes playing the brownies. Like the days of just being in a soundstage alone, like reacting to things.
Yeah. Making little jokes.
All right, look down, say, yeah, I got you, you know, kind of stuff.
Huh. I did not realize this. Probably should have mentioned this much, much earlier. But, you know, we've had the, let's see, with the little people, we've had the African-American warrior. That is Tony Cox. From, like, Bad Santa, and...
Mm-hmm.
I did not realize.
He looked very familiar, but I guess he's so young in this movie.
Yeah.
Sorry. He's just a baby. Shut up and listen. These guys are the Rangers.
The Brownies?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She likes you. That's a great reason to trust me with the Chosen One.
Well, I mean, it's she didn't like Mad Mardigan, so... And he lost her.
I do like the name Tira Azleen. I think that's a really rad fantasy name.
Yeah. But then again, I also like Galadorn and Norkut.
I think they're fine by themselves. Just when they get they wind up in the same sentence, you're like, oh, too much.
Gotcha.
Overload.
So obviously, this is a callback to Galadriel and her mirror being like, "Go on your quest, dude.
Do it.
Come on. I would be great and powerful. You'll have a queen."
Bav Morda is legit scary in this movie.
Oh, yeah. She... All creatures of good heart need your help. I love it. We're 43 minutes into the movie, and really only right now are we getting the legitimate start of the quest.
Yes, he is ready to cross the threshold at last.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because he walks right up to it, and then he's like, nope, going back, you know.
Woohoo, ice cream!
I did not know he was 17.
So yeah. Funny. Yeah. And now that, like, you hear it and you kind of look at the face, you can kind of see, like, he is just a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Apparently, some of the stuff they had to do for kind of, like, you know, the prep for the movie was teach him how to, like, take care of a baby.
Huh. It's funny.
Yeah. 1 o'clock, swordsmanship. 2 o'clock, diaper changing.
Exiled.
Kevin Pollak is great at this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the other guy...
Cool!
You know, he's alright, but... Oh, man. Definitely the brownies were some of my favorite part of this movie for a long time.
Sure.
Even down to the rat skull or the rat hood.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how much of their lines were improv'd. Feels very loose.
Yeah.
No harm will befall you. Great slash cut. Smash cut, rather. No harm will befall you.
Nerds. Oh, there's
I love this moment because this is very much like the, you know, like in Fellowship of the Ring when they get to the Prancing Pony and Bree.
Oh, yeah.
Like he's going to this human town. But in this movie, the human town is gross.
Yeah.
It's just awful.
Well, I mean, humans are pretty dirty. Let's yeah. be fair. I like how even the baby gets reaction shots.
Lots of baby reaction shots. That whole unit just for reaction shots from the baby. I got a long mustache. I got a long mustache.
Yeah. Where's that baby's mustache?
Some rough-looking characters. They're just so aggressive right off the bat. You get to know Willow.
I know. You're throwing lettuce at a baby, dude. Everyone knows you don't throw lettuce at babies. Cabbage. Cabbage. (laughs) You know, I wonder if this love potion stuff will come back later in the story.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like maybe it's being established for a...
Nah, I'm sure this is just a one-time gag.
Also, it's like, why do the brownies just carry love potion with them? Is that like a brownie thing in the lore?
You know, it could be. Could be.
Because they were clearly going for like a, like, you know, like picked sort of vibe for them. Mm. But, spit with a cat. It's really funny.
I remember
Dust
as...
broken up.
I remember as a kid thinking, like wondering, because I don't think we saw any female brownies in the big scene.
We saw fairies.
Yeah. I remember wondering if this was one of those things where, like, the males were the brownies and the females were all like the fairies.
I don't know.
You know, because when you watch this movie like 30 times as a kid, you got to start thinking of stuff. And it was either that or Mad Mardigan's gigantic fake honkers.
Yeah.
And I...
This whole scene is ridiculous.
Mm. he's even got makeup on. That's one advantage of going from VHS to Blu-ray, is you can definitely tell more of the makeup touches.
Mm-hmm. Hilda.
So are you saying Lug would be a name that might be a bit too on the nose?
A little bit,
but there's two L's. Gives that extra lug.
Hmm. Like we start our adventure, and then it's like immediately hijinks.
Woo! Well, you know, we've had lots of a seriousness. Want to breed.
Which I'm curious if that was like, okay, it's kids' films. Can we not say sex? We obviously can't say a dirty word. So they're like, let's say want to breed, which is like way creepier and more upsetting.
And yet, again, we just go to the fact that it's somehow perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why want to breed didn't catch on as a pickup line.
I love that Sorcha is an archer.
Yes.
But we see very little of her archering.
I can't even remember if we do see her archer-ring.
I don't... Maybe? Let's remember. Let's see if she actually used that rad bow she has.
And she only has three arrows, though. So it kind of makes you wonder. I mean, if someone was a good archer, you'd think they'd get more arrows.
Meet cute.
Gentlemen, meet Lug.
Have we ever seen the actress who played Sorcha in any other movies?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's done lots of stuff. Okay. She's, which I'm not going to tell you about, because it's a secret.
Oh, okay.
She was in The Man Who Knew Too Little.
Okay.
As Lori. She was in Navy SEALs. She's got, the new, soon-to-be-out Beowulf TV show?
Okay. She'll
be in that.
I love this chase scene. This, like, horse chase scene.
Sorcha also played by Joanne Whaley?
Okay.
Yeah. Apparently, her and Val Kilmer met here, got married for a little bit. And, yeah, then divorced.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah.
This thing must have been a nightmare to film.
Mm.
It's chasing, and you got all the bits with the brownies that you got to match up, and...
Yeah. And I guess this, using CGI really would not have been an option.
Yeah, not an option.
Nope. You actually had to shrink Kevin Pollak.
Yeah, actually, this is just a sidebar. My first book, in Spellsword, there's the big chase very similar to this. Mm-hmm. I thought of this scene a lot while I was writing it.
So, this is your admission of plagiarism?
Yeah, I just ripped this off completely. Totally. In my book, they were fighting frogmen. So. the scene is very like, okay, they're being chased by three dudes. And then the first dude jumps on and he knocks him off. And then there's this dude. Like, just keeping track of like the logistics of where everybody is. It's such a pain.
It really is.
Rule!
And, you know, kudos for this movie right here for giving all parties involved something to do, even if it's just saving each other from falling off the wagon.
Right.
Although, that did feel kind of like a long gap in the movie, where we didn't get to see any of the bad guys doing anything.
Right. Does he hit him with a rutabaga or something? Maybe I just wanted that to happen.
Maybe it comes here? Whoa, barrels!
Okay. How did he chunk that
nunchucks and shit? And oh, I guess that's not a nunchuck; it's a mace. But
there is some like interesting like Asian fusion to Bav Morda's troops.
Yeah,
like especially like Sorsha's helmet is very, very Japanese.
Yeah, yeah. It's a nice blend, though. It's not like overly apparent,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it keeps it visually interesting.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. And I got to appreciate that they're still keeping Mad Mardigan's real skills mostly pretty much still a surprise.
Right.
Like we saw no sword fighting. We don't know yet if his claims of being the greatest swordsman are there. And Willow is just not impressed yet with his partner.
Because it isn't until they get to the castle, right? That's when he finally gets geared up.
I can't remember if he gets geared up in the castle, but I think we get like a little bit when...
Oh, there's a little sword fighting when they raid the camp. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Tromp, 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 tromp.
As you do. Screw you guys. I'm going home. And again, Baby makes the decisions for the group. Mad Mardigan's going somewhere, but we need him. I really liked Warwick Davis's delivery of this next little bit. The reasons why he needs Mad Mardigan. The great warrior, swordsman, 10 times bigger than I am, stupid. Oh.
Aww. Nope, don't look at the baby.
She cast her. Now you love her.
And you will die for her. Alright, so correct me if I'm wrong. So Allura, is she the princess of Galadorn? Or she's the princess of another place? Did they establish that? Did we miss that?
Maybe we missed it. Because they have to get her to Tira's Lean.
Yeah, well, there's supposed to be this other random king and queen to take care of her, right?
Yeah. Now, and she's a... But there's that feeling of she's like a... I don't know. I always got the feeling that she was a princess more through, like, magical means in a way than, like, hereditary means.
Oh, okay. She's a princess in that she's, like, you know, the chosen one. She's, like, the princess of the world kind of thing.
Is just
he kind looks of... terrible with his helmet off. Put your helmet back on.
Yeah, yeah. Face mask up. How can I expect you to leave my own?
I buy you the nice skull mask. To hide your Cro-Magnon visage.
With your samurai horn on it.
Oh, slap right in the face.
See, if he was wearing a skull helmet, slap wouldn't have hurt.
She's terrifying.
Yeah, but that's... that's where the movie kind of falls apart. Is not quite... Yeah, she's really a princess. Ooh, is this it? Is this it? Because,
Really? And I'm the king of cashmere.
I don't know why he's the king of fabric.
Yeah, but also bugs me because cashmere seems too much like a... Because cashmere is a real place. So I was like, wait, is this... Where is this? All the other silly fantasy words? Why did you make it a real word? Come on! Be consistent! I mean, I get it. They wanted a silly word that people would recognize, but...
Like Tuatha Lakathok. I like that Mad Mardigan's costume is still the dress, but it's somehow the dress turned into pants and tucked into boots.
Yeah. He's basically like slid it open and like stitched it together kind of thing.
Yeah.
No wizard stuff.
Doop a doop.
Hi, Jinx. Jinx.
I'm just amazed by the scenery.
It's nice.
Yeah. And there's some charm to the fact that, in a way, this is the odd couple part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, two men and a baby type stuff.
Oh, Empress got upgraded.
Well, she's the future empress. I mean, that's the steps. You start off as princess, then you get to a future empress.
Mm-hmm.
Duh. I gotta kind of appreciate how the journey from the village to the crossroads seemed a lot longer and more perilous than from the human town to the fabled islands where Finn Rizel is living.
Mm-hmm. Where she is exiled.
Da da da.
Well, he's immediately like rooting around for. Yeah. Oh, there's a machete.
I like that it's a machete, but it looks like a piece of wood strapped to a handle. Your mother was a lizard.
No, don't go.
Look at my cuteness in despair. apparently the black root was vanilla.
Okay.
I've never had vanilla in its natural form.
I'm sure it's all right.
You don't think it tastes like ice cream?
No, I don't.
Well, that's a shame. Did we already pass the all he did was hang around and eat our eggs line?
Yeah. Yeah, all you did was fall around and eat our eggs. Yeah.
I like that line.
So, Finn Rizzell, is that supposed to be her name, or is Finn a title? I've wondered about that for years.
I think it sounds good as a title.
Because a lot of times they just call her Rizzell, and sometimes she's Finn Rizzell.
Or do you think they're also stealing the kind of, like, Japanese style of naming conventions, where the surname is first and the personal name is second?
I mean, they call Alora Dannon umpteen times.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, she's not from the same area as Finn Rizzell.
In that case. That is a crappy rock that she lives on.
Yeah. And she's not even there. Apparently that is an Australian possum.
Okay.
Is according to IMDb.
Hmm.
Now, how they train that possum to talk, that is ridiculous.
They did at the same time they were training the hawk to pick up the baby.
Oh, gotcha. That's awful.
Transformed me.
Okay, so do you think that since this is like the Blu-ray version, I'm trying to remember if like they actually did jaw movements or if that's CGI added over to it.
I see the mouth moving.
Yeah. I wonder if like the original version had the mouth movements.
I feel like it did.
That seems...
I mean, that wouldn't have been that hard of an effect to do pre-CGI. They could have just done it in post, like
sitting there
and drawing.
What was it, rotoscoping?
Yeah. Okay. Because it doesn't look great. I feel like, you know, if they'd done, like, the special edition CGI, it would have looked better.
Mm-hmm.
It was then real magic.
Because, you know, when they put out the first Star Wars special editions, all those CGI effects looked great.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
Now, you gotta wonder, why, in fact, did the soldiers who took Mad Mardigan feel the need to cut his trousers into hot pants and take his shirt?
Well, obviously... because we wanted to show off Val Kilmer's sexy bod. But I like to think it was part of some stratagem of Mad Mardigan to, like, sexily distract them and escape that didn't work out. Back to Nokmar!
Hey, I'm not the guy you're looking for. I'm, a male prostitute. Yeah! That's the ticket.
He's literally just wearing a diaper at this point.
Basically.
Oh, right in the face.
That's gotta hurt.
That's hard to do that big kick from that sitting position.
Practice often?
No, every day. 20 high kicks from where I sit behind my desk.
And one and two. We lose more desks that way.
Huh.
And this is why the brownies win the movies. Like, this is just this little bit of dialogue there. Find us, catch us, stick us in cages, torture us, and finally devour us.
No, this is more fun. Yeah.
Doop-doo. So right now we've just hit a little bit over the halfway point, so we're going to call it on a pause for this edition of the show, but tune in next week where we excitedly talk about the second half of Willow on Comics League International. So, Derek, where can they find you?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at GDerekAdams or on my blog, spell-sword.com.
And for me, you can find me on Twitter at DeadTroubadour. You can go to my main website, DeadlyTroubadour.com. And you know what? If you enjoyed this show, if you want to just help me out a little bit, feel free to visit my Patreon page. That's patreon.com/BrentThomas. And give me a dollar, because I could use it. I could really use a dollar. And that's all for this week. But yeah, stay tuned, and next week, more Willow. More Willow. Bye.